afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, hurt, disappointed and angry. Some Fianna Fáil TDs feel left out in the cold by their leader's unexpected support for repealing the Eighth Amendment. So, what do they plan to do next? What does repealing the Eighth Amendment mean? What are we likely to be asked? And will simply repealing lead to legal complications down the line? Anne Rabbitt, who was on the Eighth Amendment Committee, will be here, along with Sean Kine from Fine Gael and Richard Boyd Barrett from People Before Profit. All of that and lots more to come. First, though, it's time for the news now with Kieran Evryn. Kira, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne. You're very welcome to the programme. You can text us on 51551. Our Twitter address is at SaturdayRTE. Now I'm going to introduce our panel. First of all, we have Sean Kine, Minister of State for Rural Affairs and Natural Resources and Fine Gael TD. Anne Rabbitt, Fianna Fáil TD, who sat on the Joint Committee on the Eighth Amendment. Richard Boyd Barrett, Solidarity People Before Profit TD. Noel Whelan, barrister and author of Fianna Fáil, A Biography of the Party. And Sarah Barden, who's Irish Times political reporter. And Anne Rabbitt, I'm going to come to you first today because you and your party are in the news, really. You were on, as I said, the committee for the Eighth Amendment, and you voted against the recommendation to allow abortion up to 12 weeks without restriction. So how do you feel today now, given Micheál Martin's position? He does not agree with your position. So where does that leave you?
I respect Micheál's position the same way as he respects my position, because we have a free vote. It's a vote of conscience. And he has clearly said how he has reached his decision, no differently to how I have reached my decision. Like, I have sat on that committee for the last number of weeks and months, and I came to that position because I don't believe it represents my core values, my ethical beliefs. And I believed also I was looking for more of, I didn't want to remove the Eighth, but I was looking for wording maybe to strengthen the Eighth within the Constitution. And 12 weeks, I wasn't comfortable with that at all, Claire.
Okay. And he obviously is. But there is a group now within your party, and we read today that there is a group of people within your party, the parliamentary party, who feel hurt, who feel disappointed, and some who say they feel angry about Micheál Martin and what he did, particularly as he didn't tell you in advance.
Well, to be quite honest with you, when I went into my committee, people weren't asking me in advance what was my viewpoint. Everybody knew I was of a pro-life belief. Micheál as leader, yes, but at the end of the day, he's only one person within the party. That I know he's the leader, but he's only one person with one vote. The same as anybody when it goes out to the country for the referendum has only one vote.
But listen, the leader of the party holds more weight than others. I mean, you've got to concede that point.
I do. But actually, to be quite honest, at our parliamentary party the other night, we had a very open and frank discussion, and was very clear within the conversations within the room. Not everybody was comfortable with where the Oireachtas Committee had arrived on. Everybody was very clear on that. People weren't happy that there was we were going to be repealing the Eighth Amendment, and we were also going to be having it unrestricted abortion up to 12 weeks. And Bolby Aylward came out last night, and he was very open and frank about that. And he was reflective of a lot of the mood within the room on the night.
Okay, and are you concerned now that there will be a split in the party over this, because we know that Bobby Aylward was saying yesterday he's going to ring around, he's going to organise a meeting. We're hearing that that meeting may happen on Wednesday. What are the implications, do you think, of this?
I think what we need to do is we need to take a step back, and we need to just take a breather here for a moment. We need to be very mature in how we approach this. Micheál said in his address to the on the floor all the other evening, and I would have said this all the way along to myself, that we need to have a very balanced, respectful debate on this. We need to respect everybody's viewpoints and everybody's opinion. Like, there's approximately, from what I can read in the Irish Independent today, there's nearly 27 parliamentary party members who don't support repealing the Eighth, and of which I am one, and who don't support the 12 weeks unconditional abortion, of which I am one. But do I still believe in my leader? Yes, I do. Do I have respect for my leader? Yes, I do. But I'm at odds with him on this, and I can be at odds because I have a free vote and it's a vote of conscience.
Okay, well, we have your party colleague John McGuinness on the line. John, you're very welcome to the programme. Can I ask you, first of all, when you heard about Micheál Martin's about turn and about his statement in the Dáil?
Well, I was actually doing a radio interview at the time on the work of the Finance Committee. And before going to that particular topic, I was asked about the position being articulated by Micheál in the Dáil at that very moment. So there was no sign that this was going to be, you know, the case. There was no indication to the parliamentary party meeting the previous day that he was going to take this particular review. And I think it took people by surprise. And the members that I have spoken to are angry that they were not told prior to Thursday at the Wednesday parliamentary party meeting that, in fact, he was going to support a repeal of the 8th and
did you think? Do you think that
up to 12 weeks?
Do you think that Micheál Martin was obliged to tell you at that meeting what he was going to say?
I'm like Anne. We all have our own opinions on this, and there's two different opinions, and perhaps more in the party. But I would have thought that as party leader, he would have extended the courtesy to the parliamentary party by informing us late on Wednesday, as members were explaining their position, that he was going to address it all and outline a completely different position than what I would have expected from him. So I think that that's where the anger comes from. It's not about the position that he's taken. It's the fact that as leader of the party, I think he had an obligation and responsibility to members to at least tell us.
Will you be going to that meeting if it happens next week? The one mentioned by Bobby Aylward, he was ringing around seeing whether there was an appetite for those who have a view contrary to your leader's view to meet and to do something about it.
Well, a number of the members have been speaking to each other in relation to the position of those that hold the opposite view to the party leader, that we should come together to discuss how that view will be presented, because concern has been expressed by party members throughout the country that the party has taken the view that we are repealing the 8 with unrestricted abortion to 12 weeks. That's not the case. There is a divided view.
But you're concerned that the implication of the leader saying that sends out the message that the wider party is of that view. Is
exactly
that what you're concerned about?
Yes, and we have to find a way of ensuring that those that are pro-life will have an equal input into the radio, television, the debate itself, when it comes to that, so that we can put the alternative view that exists very strongly within the party and within the parliamentary party.
That means that, well, you're suggesting then that you would be taking part in a debate against a member of your own party who had a different view on this issue.
Well, I'm taking part in this debate today and I'm expressing a different view to the party leader, and that would be the case for a significant number of members of the parliamentary party, and we have to find a way of doing that constructively, because we want to keep the debate as constructive and as respectful as we possibly can. And Anne Rabbit, and indeed our colleague Mary Butler from Waterford, in my opinion, gave a very fine contribution to the parliamentary party meeting, a contribution that was based on conviction and passion. And a way has to be found to allow that type of expression of opinion to be put through without being dominated by either the spokesperson, Billy Keller, or the leader, Micheál Martin.
Anne, will you go to any meeting that's called next week?
I have always been available to talk to people in relation to how I came to my position in relation to the formation of the committee and how we came to our decisions on it. I will go to any meeting that I'm asked to attend if it's to voice how I came to that decision. But I will only go there if it's to articulate a positive, respectful debate. I certainly don't want to divide, Claire.
But the aim of this meeting, as John has explained, is to make sure that the people in the party who don't share Micheál Martin's view have an equal voice in Fianna Fáil.
And I think that's a fair point. A fair point that we would have a fair point when it would come out for discussion in relation to radio and for TV. But I'm here this morning, Claire, and John is here this morning. And here we are, two voices who represent a pro-life view from within our party. So I don't think we're being disenfranchised, the fact that we have a different opinion to our leader at all.
Okay, but John, I'm reading in the Irish Times, I think this piece was published last night, a TD saying that the Fianna Fáil leader would be lynched and killed by his parliamentary party, and another saying there would be war. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with any of those headlines, because within the parliamentary party, we have been given the opportunity to voice whatever opinion we hold. And that was done in a three-hour meeting last week. The only anger that comes into this is because of the party leader maybe not explaining to us on that Wednesday. But the meetings that we're talking about are meetings simply to articulate our point of view. And I think that all sides are respectful of what we are asking for.
Okay, I'm just wondering how far this will go, John.
It's important too for the members of our party to see those that are within the party on a different side being able to publicly declare their position without being hindered in any way by the party apparatus or by the parliamentary party itself.
But there's been no sign of that yet, has there?
That's what I'm saying, there isn't.
Okay,
but want to ensure that our view is heard and that it is expressed in a respectful way.
The Irish Independent editorial today says Micheál Martin's party must now either back him or sack him.
I don't agree with that either, because of the fact that we set out a long time ago to give a free vote on an issue that has divided this country in every single referendum that we've had to date and every single debate that we've had to date. And the party, in my opinion, has taken a very mature position by allowing us this vote relative to how we believe our own beliefs. And that has worked up to now. We're simply trying to ensure that the members of the party and the parliamentary party who believe in the pro-life position are given the opportunity in a respectful and constructive way to continue our contribution to the national debate on this matter.
John, I know you were having a constituency clinic today. Was it brought up there by your constituents?
It was brought up in my clinic today and indeed all day yesterday, and last night we had a discussion, a public meeting on Brexit, and outside of the meeting and discussions, yes, it was brought up and people were, I suppose, surprised and disappointed by the position taken by the leader. But having said that, they were anxious to do, as I've outlined, for the members who are supporting the position of pro-life, that they would be able to do that.
Okay, John McGuinness, thank you for joining us on the line today. And you wanted to come back in there.
I think it's important what John has said there in relation to party membership, that we've people in our own constituencies who have a particular pro-life view, and they need to know who their TDs are that are representing them. Because, as you would have acknowledged in the beginning, the party leader is at variance to my beliefs, but they would like to know party membership. Because of what had happened at the Ardesh as well, there's a lot of members out there who are probably scratching their heads wondering where they can go or who is going to represent their voice. So I think that's important, that we represent the membership. But I would like the membership to think that I have said 100 times at this stage that I'm of a pro-life view, that they would know that their own TDs who are of a pro-life view, that we're not doing a herd-like mentality within the party.
Okay, Sarah, can I bring you in here? Because if John McGuinness gets his wish, we could have Fianna Fáil TDs debating each other on this issue over the coming months. Is that a likely scenario?
I don't think so, no. I mean, I think it's actually quite funny to hear politicians talk about politicians debating each other on this very issue when, since this debate has begun, politicians have ducked for cover and, you know, declared that they want civic society to lead this campaign. And now we have a situation where one particular party politicians are fighting with each other to have a debate on the matter. I think Micheál Martin made an error of judgment by not informing the parliamentary party of his decision on Wednesday night. There was a 3-hour debate at that meeting, and Micheál Martin did speak, and he said to the parliamentary party that he was still reading the report, he was going through the submissions and the evidence, and gave no indication that he would make a very significant statement the following day. And a lot of the anger that's within Fianna Fáil is because of that very issue. Whilst most people respect his viewpoint, they don't agree with it, but they respect his right to declare it, they are very angry at the decision not to inform him of that. And it was the same mistake that Micheál Martin made in the justice, when the justice crisis was ongoing. He kept his parliamentary party very much in the dark when he was just, you know, going back and forth with Leo Varadkar and trying to save the country from a general election. He didn't inform the parliamentary party, and he's made the same kind of mistake here in this particular instance, and I think that will create,
you could call
a lot
it a mistake or a
party.
Judgment call, because as soon as you say it, it's all over the place.
I understand his rationale for doing it, because I know that as soon as he said it, would be leaked to people like me, and it could be mangled in its interpretation, and, you know, one person could interpret it one way and another person could interpret it in the other way. I think had he signalled in advance that he would make a statement, perhaps then there wouldn't be so much anger within the parliamentary party. But the fact that on Wednesday night he said to his party that he was still reading the report and didn't articulate a viewpoint, and then come back you know, 24 hours later come in with no notice to his parliamentary party or indeed to anybody else that he was going to make such a significant intervention. You know, that's really what's irritating the majority of Fianna Fáil members.
No, do you agree that's where the anger is coming from?
Well, John McGuinness has said as much in that, but in some ways that's a focus on process questions rather than substance. I mean, the substance of the debate around abortion has changed in both facts and context in the last 3 or 4 years. The facts have changed around issues like whether it is possible to limit abortion for circumstances of rape or other criminal conception and circumstances of criminal assault. The facts have changed around the availability of abortion because of the availability of the abortion pill. The facts have changed around doctors increasingly saying about the complications they face and the concerns they have around ethical and legal issues that flow for them for the amendment. Those are the facts. But the context has changed in three important respects. Firstly, on back of the precedent of the marriage referendum, the Citizens' Assembly paid a process in raising levels of political and indeed media, whatever, but public political and media understanding of some of these issues. The second context that changes, the government doesn't have a working majority. And that created quite an extraordinary dynamic at the Oireachtas All Party Committee on the Eighth Amendment, where politicians of the various parties, again, got to sit, hear, question and examine a large collection of evidence-based material from experts around these issues. And they came to different views. I mean, I listened with great care to what I thought was a very considered contribution by Anne in the Dáil on Wednesday night. She took a different position than some of the other committee members. But at least it engaged with some of that evidence. But the third context that has changed is the arrival of the modern, mature concept of conscience vote on social issues into Irish politics. And myself and Larry Donnelly and a few others first floated that concept about five or six years ago of it coming into Irish politics. People said, oh no, you need the whip system, you need the strength of the whip system and parties need control. And when we said in every post-Westminster democracy, including Westminster, they have an established pattern on sensitive social issues of a conscience vote. People said no. Now, in part out of necessity because of the trouble Enda Kenny had around the last time abortion legislation was introduced, and indeed some of the trouble Micheál Martin had, they decided the easier route in some ways was to go at conscience vote. But that has forced individual politicians to sit down and look at all of the material and not take their nod from the central party directive, as it were, or indeed an Ardèche directive. They've had to look at the evidence that was given at the Citizens' Assembly, look at the reports and evidence given at the Oireachtas Committee, and come to an individual view. And more importantly, justify and explain an individual view. I actually think it would be quite healthy if there was a Fianna Fáil group opposing the repeal of the Eighth.
What does that do to party identity, though, Noel?
But in some ways, around social issues. Well, firstly, our party identity, for use of that term, was defined by a cleavage at the start of the 20th century, in our case around the Civil War, in other countries around the difference between left-right divide that was coming then. So our party identities are very fluid now in modern times, and people's views are very fluid. There are hundreds and thousands of Fianna Fáil supporters who want to retain the Eighth. There are hundreds of thousands of Fianna Fáil supporters who are quite comfortable with the concept of abortion being available in relaxed circumstances up to 12 weeks. These issues cut across the otherwise defined political divide in all parties, and it would be quite mature if we had different voices. At this stage, it's a political question whether the referendum will happen and whether it would be framed because it requires legislation. Once that is done, all of the research shows all people want to hear about when the debate proper comes is doctors and women. Lawyers to a very limited extent, but doctors and women who can talk them through what the various factors are on both sides of it. Politicians have a role now, and it's important perhaps that people understand.
Sean, you want to come in there and then we'll hear from Richard. Yeah.
Yeah, just look, on this whole debate, ordinarily I love to see conflict and debate within the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party such as we have, but this is a much more important issue than mere politics, and both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have a healthy debate on this particular issue. We had a 4-hour parliamentary party meeting on Monday, especially a called meeting, where there's a wide view of views given and indeed many people who spent the time listening, but there was actually a full attendance, very little back or leaving and coming back. There was people listening there for the full 4 hours of the debate. Some may not have participated, and you can read your own mind in relation to that, but they gave a view. But you must remember, this process started with Enda Kenny in the Fine Gael manifesto recommending a Citizens' Assembly that would report to a committee and that all would ultimately decide that. So what we're coming to a stage now where Simon Harris will be bringing memo to government by the end of this month to allow a number of things. Basically, are we going to have a referendum, which will, obviously the cabinet will have to decide and bring to the rocks, what approach that will be, repeal simpliciter, or whether there is a need to be enabling
we're
legislation.
We're going to talk about that in detail in a moment. But going back to your own parliamentary party meeting, I heard a report that you said you were confused and conflicted by the Oireachtas Committee report. Is that accurate?
Look, like a lot of people, I have issues in relation to abortion. I supported the Protection of Life and Pregnancy Bill. We had a lot of debate on that. I attended a pro-life meeting at the time, the only politician that turned up at that meeting. I spent an hour and a half on my feet trying to explain that particular issue, the ins and outs of it, the rationale, being booed, jeered, laughed at, and five rounds of applause for turning up. So, I have no issue with debate. And, you know, I met a number of pro-life groups at that particular time, and I give them all time, up to half an hour each, where they came in groups, some local, some that I didn't know, and had a respectful debate. So, I mean, this isn't easy for a lot of members of Fine Gael, of Fianna Fáil, and other parties as well.
And have you decided where you stand now?
I will be supporting a referendum. I believe it's important that people my age and up to people that are 51 or 2 that wouldn't have had a chance to vote in 1983. It's important for democracy. Clearly, there's been a demand for the last period of time, both in the Oireachtas, through people like Richard and elsewhere, but also in civic society, that there would be a vote on this. This is the people's constitution.
You haven't said, and you're not saying where you stand on repeal.
This is the people's constitution, so it's important that the people have a say on an issue where there is demand from the legislature.
Will you be expressing a personal view?
Look, I'm still going through it, and that's what I stated quite honestly at the parliamentary party, that my comments I said at that stage were full of contradiction and confliction, and they were because there's a number of things, and I'm still going through it. I've read the report clearly, like all TDs have, but I'm also going through the transcripts of this. And you know, if you look at Tom O'Malley's contribution of NUIG in relation to rape, in relation to the legality, and I understand that's why the committee and Anne would have been through that, would have come up with, look, To actually prove rape and the whole process of it, that where rape is reported early, that's one thing, but where it's not, the 12-week issue will sort out that in most cases, not all, unfortunately, but in most cases, it will cover the issue of rape.
So you still haven't decided yet?
Look, there are still issues. As I said, I will be supporting a referendum because that is the most important thing, and it's important that the people will have their say. And I stated at the parliamentary party as well that civic society, and I agree with Noel, ultimately should have the say rather than politicians. But, you know, it's still something that I'm going through.
OK. Richard, no disunity where you're coming from.
No, and that's why I would disagree with one comment Sarah made when she said politicians have been running for cover on this issue. People Before Profit, Solidarity and the left in general have not been running for cover. They've been campaigning very, very vociferously, in my case, for 2.5 decades since I first became active around the terrible case of the X case, when the state tried to prevent a 14-year-old rape victim from going to Britain for an abortion. And indeed, Micheál Martin was health minister in the referendum that followed after that and attempted at that time to restrict abortion rights. So we are very clear that the Eighth Amendment has failed Irish women, that it must be removed. And we don't believe that either the Constitution or politicians have any right to dictate to women about their choices, about their lives, about their bodies or their futures. Frankly, I don't think that's even a political position. I think that's the only morally supportable position, because anything else has failed, first of all. It hasn't stopped abortion, but it has also created a saga of debate, of legal strife and so on, that just goes on and on and on. And I think it will only be resolved when we finally move to trust women and recognise that the Eighth Amendment has failed.
But if we are in a position where this country decides to repeal and the Oireachtas has to legislate, politicians will still have the decision-making in their hands through the legislature. So it will still be your responsibility to legislate for this.
Yes, absolutely. And in our case, we're very clear, we're pro-choice. We believe women should be allowed to decide that they should have access to abortion as soon as possible, but as late as necessary. That's our view. We think any attempt to restrict it is going to cause massive problems, is going to continue to visit hardship on people, women, specifically women, who don't feel they can go through with a pregnancy because of rape, because of poverty, because it just isn't right for them.
Okay, but
or the whole host of reasons.
But you said earlier on that politicians should not be involved here, didn't you?
Exactly. And we therefore want legislation which will put the decision back in the hands of women.
But politicians will decide whether that legislation is passed or not.
Sadly, that is the case. And sadly, that is the case.
Does that mean that you would vote against a limit of to 12 weeks?
Yes, we will.
Because it wouldn't go far enough.
Yeah, yes.
Because that's an important question.
Obviously, now, I should say no.
Yeah,
I should say I would be glad to see that as an improvement on the terrible position we're in now. Okay. But we will be proposing that we go considerably further and that we do not restrict women's choices.
Okay. Can I ask you just to pause there, because I want to move on to what we might be asked in any question in the coming months in a referendum and what the implications of that will be. We'll take a quick break first. Just before we move on to what we might be asked in any referendum, Sean, a lot of speculation this week, or a lot of chat around whether Micheál Martin stole a march on Leo Varadkar. What do you think?
No, look, I mean, Micheál Martin is entitled as leader of his party to express his views when he feels that it was most appropriate. Remember when Leo got elected as Taoiseach on the first day of the Dáil, in his acceptance speech, he stated that he wishes to see a referendum in 2018. And as I said, the process was laid out prior to that by Enda Kinney and by the Fine Gael in the parliamentary in our manifesto. And unlike Micheál Martin, Leo has to bring the cabinet with him. He has to get agreement from cabinet to present legislation to the Dáil. He has to, as leader of government, bring the Dáil with him for whatever legislation is going to be put to the people. So
has he told you when he's going to tell the people?
He said he's in listening mode. He is listening to the views of membership of the parliamentary party, to the debates in the Oireachtas, and the different views across the Oireachtas, because he has to bring, you know, he has to be confident there will be a majority of members in support of whatever he's bringing as leader of a minority government.
Okay. And as we said, you're a member of the committee on the Eighth Amendment, and your contribution to the debate during the week was emotional, I felt, really. I mean, do you feel a great pressure?
Huge pressure, actually. I feel a huge pressure on myself as a female, who voted against A, repealing the Eighth, and B, not supporting the 12 weeks. So there's a huge pressure there. Because I was of a viewpoint all along, in cases of rape, incest and fetal abnormalities, I have huge compassion, understanding. And I also wanted to reflect that I didn't have my head in the sand. I didn't go in there with a closed opinion that nothing was to change. I didn't. I listened to all the stories and all the evidence. But unfortunately, it was a little bit too far for me completely from a pro-life point of view. 12 weeks unrestricted, I couldn't support it, Claire. What? But that does not mean to say I will not support a referendum. I most certainly will.
So you think the referendum should happen, as Sean Kine has said as well?
Absolutely. I believe that democracy should play, and I believe that the people should have their say.
What has the level of lobbying been like?
It's horrific. From both sides, because regrettably, or whatever way you look at it, I'm not pro-life enough for the pro-lifers, and I'm not pro-choice enough for the pro-choicers, and I am actually just, I formed my own opinions based on all the evidence that was put before myself. I am pro-life. I didn't want to change what was, I do want certain amendments to be done, but that's not what came before us, because I voted against repealing Article 43.3.
Okay, so perhaps, Richard, because your position is
totally
clearer than Anne's, are you subject to lobbying despite that, or...?
Yeah, but I mean, now, of course, I got a couple of nasty letters through the clinic door, threatening, a couple of them. But to be honest, I wouldn't be overly worried about them. And generally speaking, I find that people are engaging seriously with the issues. And I don't think this horribly divisive campaign that some people are worried about is going to pan out. I mean, I remember actually being physically beaten up by so-called pro-life people outside the Dáil at the time of the X case. I don't see that happening this time, or anything even like it, because I think Irish society has changed, and whether you're pro-choice as we are, or in the majority of cases, people who previously were anti-abortion, I think those opinions are shifting, and they're shifting because Irish society has changed, because the evidence has come in that the Eighth Amendment did not prevent Irish women from having abortions. It simply drove them abroad to have those abortions. And I would just say to Anne and everybody else who might personally have a pro-life position, the issue at stake is not your personal opinion, because you should have the right to choose in your own personal circumstances. The issue is, should the state or should politicians impose their personal opinions on other women and affect their lives? And that's why we will be arguing with those who personally are anti-abortion that they should leave that as a personal opinion and not trying to enshrine it.
And I think that's what I was trying to say on my contribution on Wednesday night. I do not have that right to deny the person with fetal abnormalities. I do not. And that's why it was emotional, because I felt the pressure that even though I might be of a particular view, I still acknowledge I don't have that right.
Okay, Sean, and then we're going to move on to what we might be asked.
Yeah, it's very important that people know when the referendum, if the referendum happens, and presume it does, what it is that the government might be proposing in the form of legislation. They need the maximum amount of information in terms of not just heads of a bill, but more clarity, a detailed structure of a bill of what might be put in its place. It's also important that I would imagine what wasn't there in 1983 is an independent electoral commission that will provide the factual information in relation to the different arguments. That can only be set up, I understand, after a bill to establish a referendum is allowed, but that there will be preparatory work before that in terms of preparation for the yes and the no side, to give that balanced information that every household would have that.
Sarah, can you bring us up to date with where we are with what form this referendum might take? I know Simon Harris was meeting the Attorney General in the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. Just tell us where we might be at this point.
Well, the timeline is that Simon Harris will bring a bill, will bring a memo to Cabinet in the last week in January, and at that meeting he will seek permission to hold a referendum. He'll seek a government decision as to whether or not they accept the Oireachtas Committee recommendations, and he'll seek permission to draft a referendum bill and to draft the general heads of a bill, i.e. what will be in place if the Eighth Amendment is repealed from the Constitution. There's a lot of meetings going back and forth. You know, obviously this is a very technical issue, but my understanding is the Attorney General has advised that there would have to be an enabling, there would have to be an enabler put into the Constitution in the event of repeal, that the AG's advice is that repeal simpliciter would not prevent the state from legal challenge.
So if we simply take out the Eighth Amendment, we have to put something back in there.
That's apparently the legal advice that's been given to the government. But needless to say, you know, there hasn't been any formal advice given by the AG. He hasn't come to a conclusion. That's just our understanding of the initial advice in which he's been given. The Oireachtas Committee obviously voted against that. They voted in favour of repeal simpliciter, and that will create, I suppose, a difficulty for the government in that people like Solidarity, People Before Profit and the Labour Party would not, who are in favour of repeal and in favour of abortion up to 12 weeks, and Sinn Féin for that matter, would not support something else being placed back into the Constitution.
Well, my understanding is what has been considered is repeal with an enabling piece to state that the Oireachtas will have to legislate, or will have the powers to legislate.
So
for
the
abortion.
People will be asked, do you support repealing the Eighth Amendment and allowing the Oireachtas to legislate for abortion?
Yes. That's my understanding. And again, that's subject to a formal decision of government, but that's my understanding.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there was a debate and many of us would have been of the view, being supportive of replacing the eighth with some form of system in terms of allowing for abortion in cases of rape, incest and fatal abnormalities. The question then arises, and I know this would have been discussed at the committee, in terms of how you define and prove rape and also the whole area of fatal abnormality in terms of a definition. Now, there will be still, in terms of the legislation, there will be issues around the fatal abnormality side of things that will be quite complex. But I think what has been proposed in relation to
the 12
week...
be asked that. Is that what you're saying? The people will just be asked, do you want the Oireachtas to legislate for abortion?
Yeah.
Richard, you were shaking your head there, I think, when Sarah was speaking.
Well, first of all, the legal advice that Brian Murray, that Noel referred to in his article yesterday, says there's a number of possibilities as to how things might be interpreted after a simple repeal. Now,
just to explain to people, Brian Murray, Senior Counsel.
Brian Murray, Senior Counsel, who gave legal advice on this issue to the Citizens Assembly.
Well,
which is on YouTube, it's worth having a look at. Yeah. It's 37 minutes and it's
certainly worth having a look at. But my conclusion and the view of People Before Profit and Solidarity, and I think the overwhelming majority of the repeal movement, is we just need simple repeal. First of all, I would worry that anything else will drag out the debate and won't actually get us to a conclusive position, because there is no watertight, conclusive legal position.
But does simple repeal not take us back to the pre-1983 position where there were implied protections for the unborn in the Constitution?
What Brian Murray said was it could, but he actually thought the most plausible interpretation of where we'd be at when we get simple repeal is that actually it would be the Oireachtas who would decide. That's what he said was the most plausible outcome of simple repeal. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to get that repeal through. That is the most plausible thing. Anything can be legally challenged. No matter what you put in the constitutional amendment, there can be potential legal challenges. But I don't want that to be an excuse
to drag
this out.
Well, do you think it would be more problematic for the electorate if they were asked to repeal and enable the Oireachtas to legislate?
I think
is that what you're concerned about?
Yes, I am absolutely concerned about that. And that we get bogged down in legal arguments that will drag out the whole debate and mean we'll have a later referendum. And to my mind, it is critical we have the referendum at the end of May so that young people will be here to vote.
OK, Noel Whelan, can you come in on this for us and cast your legal eye?
I've been saying for several months that it was actually at this point, when the cabinet had to make the political and legislative decisions about what proposal it was putting to the Oireachtas, that would become the most complicated, technical, and most likely to delay a referendum. And my view, I offered the view several months ago, that last autumn, while the Oireachtas Committee was sitting, the government and cabinet should have been exploring some of these complex legal issues. And to some extent they were, but I always said that this was where the risk was going to be. The real risk is that you would rush to something that wouldn't achieve the objective you want to achieve, which is if you believe in repeal, that the Oireachtas itself would decide what future abortion legislation would be. The Brian Murray presentation, he did not give a definitive legal advice to the Citizens' Assembly. He offered a view that after you deleted Article 43.3, which was put in by the 8th Amendment, there were three possible scenarios about how the courts in the future would interpret that. And one concern for those who are in favour of more relaxed abortion provision, let me use that, I hope, uncontentious phrase, is that one interpretation is, well, there was an equal right to life for the unborn in the Constitution.
Pre-83?
No, that there was before the referendum.
Right.
That in the referendum, the people deleted it and took it out, and therefore any restriction on the balancing rights of the woman to bodily autonomy or privacy or whatever could not be restricted by the Oireachtas. That the Oireachtas theoretically couldn't impose any limit on abortion at any time scale, because that would mean that it would be giving a right to some life to the unborn child, which the people had just deleted from the Constitution.
But that is an interpretation, and there are others.
That's a minority interpretation. Yeah. But it is not a fringe interpretation, is the point I make. This is not a limited view among lawyers. There are some constitutional experts in the academic realm. There are some practicing lawyers who believe it. And I've privately had this conversation with judges who said, actually, that is a possibility, that what could happen here. It is the minority view. And Brian Murray and I, and for a bit from me, a lowly junior, but I would agree with, is in my view, it's the right interpretation to think that the people taking out this revert to the previous position, and the Oireachtas has a large, wide spectrum of room in which to provide for abortion if it so decides. My point is that, and here's my concern, and the reason I wrote the piece, my concern was this was going to get caught up in the ideological and political battle about where you are on the abortion provision spectrum, rather than leaving it as a pure, neat, clean, legal question.
I think the
best way to leave it as a neat, clean paper is if the attorney comes back, and the attorney's final advice process is not, and Seamus Wolfe is an impressive constitutional lawyer himself, but it's not something he comes up with the top of his head. He would reach out to look for legal advice from some of the top constitutional lawyers, I suspect, in the law library. He would have a lot of constitutional legal advice and precedent from other times this issue was considered in the Attorney General's office. And he will come back to the Cabinet with a definitive view as to whether a sentence or two, or what enabling sentence or two, are need to go in instead of 43.3. And I think that shouldn't then become a political or ideological row. It should be saying that's the most cautious way to give effect to what
it will become is. A political and ideological
That's inevitably the risk.
It will, because you're asking people to hand over responsibility for this to the Oireachtas.
Well, once you repeal the 8, you do that anyway.
Absolutely.
Once you repeal the 8, you do that anyway.
Do you not think, though, even the perception, if you put that in the question, that it changes things for people?
No, the most simplistic view would be to say, if I delete 43.3, take the election, then that gives it all back to the Oireachtas. But as a matter of constitutional law, that isn't necessarily the impact.
But it is, as Brian Murray said, the most likely and plausible interpretation of what decision the people would have made,
which is
to take the issue of abortion out of the Constitution.
But my point is, this is not putting the issue of abortion in the Constitution, it's allowing the Oireachtas to hold it. But because other interpretations potentially exist, you may need to put in an enabled provision to stop them holding sway instead of the most likely one.
But my point is, if you start to talk about that now, we are going to drag out the process.
Which is why I argued it should be talked about months ago.
I don't think we should drag out the process. And I would say further, that no matter what you put to the people, there is a potential. Nothing can stop somebody taking a constitutional challenge afterwards. Okay,
that may well happen anyway.
So let's have that discussion after we repeal the 8th. Because the one thing that is certain is that repeal the 8th hasn't worked, and I think a majority of people are going to vote to remove it.
Sean?
I think Minister Harrison's contribution in the last day, which is a very impressive contribution, stated that he is working with the Chief Medical Officer and the AG's office and his officials to consider how best to translate the recommendations into legislation should the wishes of the people be so. I'm not a constitutional expert by any means, but ensuring and considering this whole issue has been fraught with difficulties since 1983 and prior to that in terms of back and forth of referendums, etc., etc. Surely the clarity of an enabling piece of legislation to confirm that the issue of abortion in the Constitution will be decided by the Oireachtas, that the people will be allowed that. Now, again, that is subject to the recommendation to government by the AG and agreement by government. But, I mean, if that is there to ensure that if that is what the people are asked, that will provide clarity on that issue, I believe.
And Sarah? I suppose just to say, Noel was talking about, you know, why the government weren't necessarily doing their homework in the background when the Oireachtas Committee was ongoing. They were involved in some scenario planning was the phrase that they used. But I suppose the difficulty now is that their back is up against the wall. They've committed very much to a May or June referendum. Yeah. And as Richard said, in order for students to be able to cast their vote, they really are up against a very tight time frame. You know, I think legal advice obviously differs. It's the nature of legal advice. The Citizens' Assembly came to its conclusion that there should be an enabling provision placed in the Constitution. The Oireachtas Committee came to a different one. It now seems like the AG's provisional legal advice is that there should be an enabling position. And on the basis, if the AG does advise that, the government would be hard-pressed to go against the advice of the AG on this basis, considering, I suppose, what happened in 1983.
The fact that the Oireachtas Committee came to a different view than the Citizens' Assembly is interesting in this. The Citizens' Assembly advice was all in public session by Brian Murray and others at that session, and then they deliberated on it. The Oireachtas Committee did hear interesting presentations from Mary O'Toole, Senior Counsel, and Fiona de Londres, which are, again, also worth watching. But the bulk of the advice the committee followed which from Nuala Butler, senior counsel, who we'd all like, in fairness, is again worth hearing, was done in private session at the committee. And I know that some of the committee, perhaps even including the chairperson, were interested in that advice should be published rather than left just in private session. And that might usefully inform this debate as well, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anne would have heard that advice, and I know she's not in a position to hear it, to share it, but it's just
it was done in private, so, like, to be fair, exactly. it wouldn't be fair for me to comment.
Maybe we'll have to make that decision.
Okay. But we're, I mean, just to say, we're not going to get a definitive legal position. I mean, there's different camps on this, and we're not going to get that definitive thing. But if we allow that debate to prevent or complicate or delay the referendum,
but it's an
to my mind,
it's
that would be
part of the debate.
Simplify the debate,
but I don't see why it should delay things. I mean, there will be, have to be a bill produced to allow a referendum, and that will have to be debated in the Dáil. I'm presuming there will be no need for pre-legislative scrutiny or any of that type of thing, because we've had this debate for so long. But again, that's presumably a decision that has to be made. So, I mean, this is another sentence in that bill, if you like. So, yes, they may add to a few hours of debate, but it will be a debate on that bill that has to be had anyway to allow the referendum.
A couple of sentences in the Constitution have messed us around for 35 years messed Irish women.
Would that leave it there?
Disregarding the Attorney General's advice in 1983 also contributed to the problems.
Okay, we'll take a break. Back with more after this. Sinn Féin announced earlier today that Mary Lou MacDonald is now the president-elect of the party. She was introduced as such by Gerry Adams at a meeting of the Ord Cóirle this morning in Belfast after his 35 years in charge. Here's what Mary Lou had to say.
The truth is, my friends, I won't fill Gerry's shoes. But the news is that I brought my own. So I will fill my shoes. I will walk in my shoes, and we together over the coming years will walk a journey that is full of opportunities, full of challenges, but I believe which marks a defining epoch, a defining chapter in our achievement of a united Ireland and the ending of partition. And as Gerry has said, that's not a pipe dream, that's not empty rhetoric. That is the road we're on.
Mary Lou MacDonald there speaking in Belfast when she was announced as president-elect of the party, due to be confirmed at a special meeting of the party on the 10th of February. And Sarah, you wrote a profile piece of Mary Lou MacDonald, I see, which was published in the last number of hours. And you say she was always destined for high office. What's her leadership style going to be like, do you think?
Well, I think that kind of remains to be seen. I mean, I don't think it'll come as any shock to anybody that Mary Lou MacDonald is president-elect of Sinn Féin. But I suppose what we don't know is what the nature of her tenure will be. As deputy leader, I suppose she showed blind loyalty in a way to the leadership and to Gerry Adams. She was often the person sent out to fight the fires when various controversies arose. As to whether she will continue, I suppose, to defend and honour, or to kind of distance or allow Sinn Féin to wrangle free from the shackles of the past, remains to be seen. What we do know is that a lot of the people that Gerry Adams has in place at the hierarchy of the party and headquarters and stuff, they will remain, but there will slowly be a transition where she'll start to bring in her own people, her own advisors and so forth. So I don't think we'll see any sudden change to Sinn Féin under Mary Lou MacDonald, but I think it'll be a work in process, and perhaps, you know, coming into the next general election will be when we'll really see what Sinn Féin will be like under Mary Lou MacDonald.
Well, she will still have to strike that delicate balance, won't she, between the past and the present and the future of Sinn Féin.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's not just because Gerry Adams is standing aside as leader, the party is still very much the same. You know, it's very much bound to its past, and I suppose if she was to show any deflection, or if she was to try and distance herself from Sinn Féin's past, then that would infuriate a lot of their voters and a lot of their members. But she does have a real task, is to try and bring Sinn Féin to a new modern voter. I mean, she has very much said that she wants Sinn Féin to be a party of government in the south and in the north, and to make Ireland united. She has a difficult task on her hands to make Sinn Féin in any way attractive to Fianna Fáil, or indeed Fine Gael down south anyway.
Okay, but a younger leader, and I don't know if our other politicians have a view here, is likely to make a difference to Sinn Féin, isn't it, surely?
I think there's a lot of focus these days, whether it's Macron or Varadkar or now Mary Lou, on, you know, the young new face. And I think that's quite superficial, frankly, analysis of where politics is at.
You're not turning into an old grump, are you?
No.
A veteran socialist.
Listen, I hope I'm still
included
in the category of the young.
Marxist.
But anyway, whether I am or I am, I think in the end it will be big policy issues that will decide it. I mean, do Sinn Féin open up the option of going in with Fianna Fáil, or do they keep to the left, if you like? That could be a watershed moment for the future of Sinn Féin, which will be more important than the personality, if you like, who makes that decision.
But the personality, I suppose, matters, because obviously Gerry Adams, his finest hour wouldn't be in debates and so forth. And if you have Micheál Martin, who's a fine debater, Leo Varadkar, who's also a fine debater, going head to head with Mary Lou McDonald, those things do actually make a difference, you know, especially in general election campaigns.
All right, roll on the next leaders' debate. We're back here next Saturday and we'll see you, I hope, on Monday night at 10:30 on RT Radio 1. Thanks for joining us today.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Anne Farrell. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Leslie Anderson, and Cara O'Hare was on sound.